This is Dicho Haola.
Super hard.
You're now listening to Green Development and Taiwan. I'm your host, James.
And I'm Yuping.
So I know TEP is still quite young. 3 years.
3 years.
And a lot of the international comparisons that you might want to have applied in Taiwan, it's a very short amount of time to actually have something be successfully lobbied, implemented, and then monitored.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to ask if anything has been successful in that way. My question is more on, have you found any interesting comparisons, interesting procedures or cases that you really think can be applied to Taiwan? So there's a difference here between something that's good and something that's good and can be applied to Taiwan. Is there something that you've identified and think, I really want to work hard on getting this in, or I think Taiwan has a good chance if we modify this and this?
I had previous experience. I kind of abandoned it at the moment, like putting it aside, the thing that we just mentioned in the office, the ecological impact assessment. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been lying there in my at the back of my head for so long that I think at some point I just wanted to make it happen here, because I can see how powerful that kind of things can, if you manage to establish something like that, it will make everything. It's including solar, but it's not just solar, many things to follow a certain kind of thing. It's not procedure, it's about the real thing that we are talking about. Yeah, so in terms of impact assessment, ecological impact assessment in other countries, it's a chapter of the environmental impact assessment, the EIA. Yeah, and it's one of the most important chapter that requires a lot of professionalism and I think also room in that particular country of how they explain the how they do that properly among the skilled workers, the consultant, the field of professionalism. Mm. So it's not about a particular methodology to put in Taiwan, because then it will be very complicated to start with, and people have to, you know, you need to persuade them to do the training, and then you need to come up with a way to give them certification, and then to monitor their performances, and to make sure they would still follow the kind of requirement when they are doing the actual work, which wouldn't really come true, because if the government doesn't require or understand why they have to do such a complex methodology, then they would not even allow them to use that this new methodology. So it will require the government agency to understand the importance of having a standardized methodology, and it's this particular one, not the current one, which is stupid. And it also would require the consultant companies to be open and transparent to each other to a certain way that they would all agree this is going to be beneficial to all of us. If we kind of, it's not a company a competition between companies, it's individual within this field of work that they have to establish a certain kind of ladder. Like in the UK, they have a first stage of certification, which is maybe habitat survey. That's a general idea and the first and fundamental skill you need to know before you become a qualified ecologist. Mm-hmm. So that's like the first step. And then also maybe wildlife survey, a general one. But then as you mature and then you get more certification about, like, for example, owls survey, bats survey, butterfly survey everything, and that doesn't require you to do a lot of tests. It's just maybe several days intense workshop, and then you got the certification. The certification mainly asked you to know about this, in that particular mission, you have to report it in a certain way that everyone else understands you and can. It's almost like scientific journals,
yeah,
that you need to put out how you do it, and the how you do it methodology is more fixed because it's an acknowledged methodology.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you don't use that general one, you are allowed to use your own one. You just have to justify yourself of why you don't use that one. You definitely would have an explanation, and then it's acceptable.
Yeah.
So that's how you actually talk. Communicate with each other. That in it's not about communicate this with the government or the general audience. It's about yourselves among the skilled workers.
Mm.
And how you report it is about the results, and conclusion is about giving advices. So that would, you will have to make clear that, make sure that the government and the general audience would understand. So at the moment, it's totally opposite in Taiwan. Our report is like a brick, and then it has all the raw data as a result. No one understands it.
So it's not processed into information, it's just raw
data. It's just raw data, as many as possible. Yeah, and there's many of time it's in lack of the final advices. They withdraw from their actual opinion, from doing their work. They should have addressed what they think would be best responsibly, and they don't. In Taiwan, they don't have to. They just give you a huge list of raw data, and then that's all. Whatever you think is best, you can decide. That's how I say it. So it's not about increasing the skill for catching more birds or your ability to get the data. It's more about how do you understand your role and the way you report it, and how you maintain the standards of everyone's of this field. Yeah, so I think that's there's a huge requirement for that, and it has to generate from this group of people to understand the importance of that. As I said, they are now like keeping particular skills as their secret box, in their secret box.
Yeah.
They don't really show it to each other, and that is a barrier, because then how do the government understand if they have three different companies doing eagle survey for a particular site, to understand whether they can or cannot develop a solar site, and the three companies might give you totally different
results.
Yeah, and now how do you compromise that? So that, I think that's a fundamental thing that we need to do it systematically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So still at the back of my head, we still just need to find a way to do it. At the moment, I think solar development actually gave us a better chance than my previous mission was doing river restoration, which was more fixed. It's just more fixed in that field. People consider themselves as professionals, the engineers,
yeah.
Other engineers, not the ecologists, so you don't get too much saying. But here in the field of renewable energy, there aren't the established professionals yet.
Mm.
So it's a communication between the developers and whoever is willing to talk to them. And not many people are working with them.
I'd imagine that solar energy developments require a different set of skills, communication skills, engineers, etc., processes, compared to river restoration, because solar developments are developments. They're new things going into different areas. There aren't new rivers coming along that can, now all of a sudden this community is impacted. So yeah, I can imagine it could be quite frustrating, but also exciting, the potential for solar developers still haven't really found their voice in that way. They don't have their set experts that it's hard to get in, and they don't have
And because we, our people in the business field of work, they, or engineers, they are not really fully aware of what, why they would, actually they should have an in-house planner in environmental good at environmental issues. Even better to have their own ecologist, because they always have to do it, and whenever they get hold of a site, then they should do the monitoring. So they can of course sign the contract with a company, but if they don't have anyone who know how to interpret and manage the whole thing within their company, there's no way to really make a good decision, a sound decision. Yeah, so it's something we need to
address.
I'm
curious, change the topic a bit. So you said that the objective of TEP has changed over time, and the projects that have changed over time. I'm curious what the first thing or things that you actually worked on were.
The first things was the one that you've visited, the aquavoltaics.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting story. I was trying to establish a new organization, but we haven't got a staff. I was the potential first one, but then we haven't had staff to that we need to pay, and then we haven't really got the first topic.
Yeah.
We haven't decided how we are going to develop this organization. It's just still just at the beginning, initiating the whole thing. So it gave me, if I don't ask for, well, I can, I at the time I wasn't starving, so gave me some, a period of time that I don't have to worry about getting money or, you know, putting myself to a certain task. So I was exploring the potential projects. I was talking to professors and some or previously known governmental agencies, and just looking for ideas, but not deciding. But then there was a very clear message requirement showing from Hanling. He was then working in another NGO, and his main task then was about solar development and solar conflicts in Tainan. So he invited me because I know about the ecological checklist, and he, along with many other organizations, environmental organizations, they were trying to persuade the government to do something like that, as we do in river management. So he asked me to provide my insights of how, if we are going to use that kind of idea to do it in solar development, how do we draft the concept. Yeah, so we get to because I was free, so we had many meetings, and we went to the governmental consultations, and we talk among others to draw out, but among the two of us, we draw out the first draft that we think is reflect our values and ideas. And so that become my first mission, carrying the, you know, the title as the organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got to be known from by others working this first case, and it's no pay, and so we got a lot of free time to do that, and no one else knows what we are doing and why we're doing it. Yeah, so it was ridiculous. At some point I was so busy that I stay up so late every day. was closed in my room, and not my not even my family understand why I was so busy, because I was supposed to be out of work. Yeah, I was even more busy than in my previous job at some point, because we were trying very hard to beat the governmental schedule and present them something that we feel confident of what we are doing. Yeah, so it was the first half of a year when we were trying to gather enough numbers of our members to go through the process. At the same time, I was working on that, and that become the main topic when we were having our first general assembly. So I talked to my friends as members of how and why I had this dream of having a new organization. It's vague, but then there's a particular topic that we were doing in solar, in reducing, mitigating a solar conflict, and that's kind of in many ways described the possibilities that my organization can work on. Yeah. So
do you think that first project really set the tone?
Kind of. Yeah. It's beyond our planning. We didn't really plan to do so. It just fell
into your lap.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even to this day, it's most of what you do is looking at social conflict around agriculture, now moving into agrivoltaics, agriculture.
Yeah. It's funny, right? Because we didn't really plan the whole thing. I remember my first failed proposal was actually to carry on the concept that I work on my previous project. It's about ecological network among Taiwan, but we are not really doing that. We were going to work with a particular agency under Agriculture Ministry to collect international data of how in other countries it can be done, but it's not about national ecological network. It's about, under this concept, how farmland, agriculture lands can play a role. Like, because he's under the Agriculture Ministry, they were interested in a way that they know in Europe and maybe in America, you can have something like a land bank. The idea, yeah, land can be conceptualized as banking system. So money is actually not a real thing, a really valuable thing. It's how we put value on it. Yeah, so the same thing for land. You don't have to grab the land. You should know how to value it. Now we value it economically, but we should value it ecologically as well. Yeah, so how do European countries come up with, they do have a general concept, and each country have their own, about the ecosystem services mapping system, something like that. So by mapping, they know the relationship among the landscape, and also the value of each piece of land. If you want to develop or change the current land use of a particular land, then you need to compensate that or mitigate the impact. Then it will come like straightforward. First, you need to quantify or qualify the value of the ecosystem so that people can talk about it and calculate about it. So he's very interested, that agency member is very interested in that, and I was also. So we kind of love this idea, but then they cannot really get the money they're supposed to be there, and also they require us to do it in a crazy short time, like half a year, to finish 6 different countries. It's impossible. Yeah. And it's during COVID, so there's no way to visit the country, so it just doesn't sound very good. Yeah, so I abandoned that, but we were very excited about that kind of things.
So are you still interested in putting value on pieces of land, of course, ecosystem services?
Yeah, I used to dedicate like 2 years time on that kind of thing. If we are talking about whether we should and why we should go for organic farming in a particular place, you can start from now. It's maybe traditional, conventional way of doing the farming, and then you start from that point. You think of whether we, if we transition into organic farming, like you set a timeline for maybe 20 years time, and then you set the goal. For example, imagining 10% of the farmers change into organic, and as a starting point, or within 20 years, 100% of them change into it, and how much the rate's going, and then you put into factors like how conventional farming really is putting, well, really affect the whole environment in good or bad ways, and how organic farming really is. So it's a cause and effect of different decision land use that you can describe. If you find the best way to fully describe it, you should be able to realize why and how we should change into a better way of the lifestyle. So conventional farming, it produces cheap products, its business is thriving, but then we were using a particular case as organic tea in north of Taiwan. So we would be drawing from specific data about how, like for example, if you change from traditional to organic farming in tea plantation, you definitely would lose the first 3 years products, because it's a transition that you don't get anything. Yeah, so you can draw from literature review of this particular data, and then you put it into your imaginary model. And then, but data shows if you continue, and then on the third year, fourth year, and fifth year, if you also grow your brand and work with other partners, then you can expect yourself working hard enough, smart enough, you can expect yourself to exponentially your income every year. Like, because organic farming, the starting point is hard, but then when it's established, you don't have to keep giving it a lot of pesticides and maybe nutrients anymore. So you don't have to buy things to fit in, and then you will have yes. And whereas compared to conventional ones, you might continue your business, but it won't be successful all as forever. So if you put timeline as 20 years, then maybe according to literature, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, the yield started to decrease, and problems started to show. Yeah, so it's not a very successful, healthy business model if you take it in a 20 years time. Yeah, so it's how he do this kind of assessment to put all real time, real situation and detailed things to consider, and that would he wants to reflect the real situation as much as possible.
Although one camp argues that it might make it easier to justify land use change or certain practices, but then it also helps, on the other hand, with monitoring and calculating potential losses and gains, and having a common language, which is the dollar.
Because
we look at footprinting, carbon footprinting, ecological footprinting,
carbon tax.
That all happens based on dollar being tied to a certain activity.
Yeah.
And therefore to calculate how many emissions are involved or how many methane or carbon is involved.
Yeah.
So having a ecological system services having a common value on it that can be translated and compared across soil and water and rivers and etc. It's good from a monitoring perspective as well.
Yeah, and when we were doing this exercise, even given a short time to just had a feeling, it just it can play around with the monetary terms so much. And even if you draw data from a paper, paper has their own limit to be applied in a real situation. So that methodology is not perfect. But I was thinking when we were talking about the banking system, it's not always necessary always referring to this kind of things. Land banking can be, you don't talk about money, you talk about land, about this particular value. And if you want, if you have to use that particular land when it has such and such ecological services, then the first thing is you have to demonstrate why you have to disturb this. If it's justifiable, then you need to find the way to, well, previously it was net zero. No net loss.
No net loss.
Okay. Now it's in the UK, it's spreading around Europe. It's net gain because no net loss is a loss. Yeah. Considering the errors that we might make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too optimistic most of the time. Yeah. So it's creating a net gain. So if you have to disturb a particular place, you need to find adjacent area, another place, and you need to find ways according to ecological terms to improve it to a certain amount that you can kind of cancel out your impact on that particular land.
Ecological offset.
Yeah, so that's the in Germany and the Netherlands, how they use it to do this land protection in a way. It's not stopping people from change of their use of land. It's by having a balance of the landscape and knowing why they are doing this and yeah. So some places they have they can be used as conservation. So they have credits that you can borrow, they can sell, or they're lent to some other places. If you for example, solar can be a temporary site.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to buy, you can just borrow, and in a certain time limit you can return it. So the credit become the monetary terms. It's not how much, it's about how many points you actually have to collect. And it's not, you know, 100 points and you collect 101 points. It's equivalent to the particular value you are going to affect. Yeah. So it can, in if you really want to establish it, it can be. It's just, yes, of course, if you don't do it properly, it's very easy to slip into just a game. Just a greenwash.
Greenwashing.
Yeah, greenwashing.
This idea of ecological offset. So if a development is going to come in, try to improve the condition of an adjacent area. This actually shows up in some Taiwanese environmental laws as well. But in practice, we don't see that as much.
No.
And also the procedure to do so. So maybe in law it says to improve an adjacent area to a similar standard. But that's, again, no net loss, not a net gain. You're not making it better.
Yeah.
It's not the campsite campsite idea that if you go camping overnight, when you leave, you want to leave it in the same state or better for the next person.
Yeah.
So if you are developing something on a particular site that has some, maybe not a super protected ecosystem or species, but you're still going to dislodge something. They don't, what you're dislodging, whether it's a plant species or an animal species, doesn't know to go across the road to the place that you've redeveloped.
Yeah.
So how do you
I think that requires a third party. It definitely requires another party. It's not within, you know, the developers. Like, for example, in the EIA situation, it's not within the EIA, the developers and the judge, whoever that one is, the decision makers.
Yeah.
Because that's so biased. And neither of them is irresponsible for the whole thing. Yeah, so it requires another a party to tell to judge whatever what extent they need to be, and his judge is not a decision making. It's just a fair opinion of that particular thing, and that's his right, his responsibility. And his judge would be put into as an evidence, and then the decision maker can make decisions based on opinions, and that's a balanced situation. But it's not existence.
Yeah.
So whatever written on our EIA cannot be implemented because of this. It's doomed.
My final question is, with 3 years of momentum behind TEP and better understanding of what the projects you've done, what do you see going forward for your organization? Is it going to be more of the same kind of projects? Is there anything else that you want to look at? Is there anything in your radar that you're curious about going into the future?
I can see for a year or two, starting from now, we will definitely be working very hard on community energy and agriculture, agrivoltaics, and in the best situation to combine these two. That's something I think not many other people are passionate about, and for us, that's a key. Being an organization who's very dedicated to climate action and also dedicated to
environmental protection,
it's something I think if we want to balance these two things, we need to find the actual key solution to carry on, and that's something we need to do. And yeah, so that's very clear. And in order to do so, we will have to mobilize the community, the developers, and the government all at the same time. So I think it's within the first year, we already saw ourselves as a platform to connect different stakeholders, but to hold everyone to be accountable for that core value and principle that we think is fundamental for just transition of renewable energy. So we still are like that. It's just whatever exactly we are doing every year get to change. So I hope that kind of things were reflected on the website, but maybe it's not very clear. So
it's definitely there. And from
everything
that I've observed over the past 4 months, it's very much looking at just transition within the energy transition.
Yeah.
How to get people on board.
Yeah.
In Taiwan, the application of energy transition it's unique. Not entirely unique to every country, but unique in itself. And interesting with solar is that it can be applied in so many different ways, but in a lot of the big countries it just gets applied in two ways, rooftop or on the ground.
Boring.
Where's the challenge in that? But Taiwan doesn't have those liberties. There's rooftops, but there's a lot of illegal structures on there. It's high density, so the energy you collect, it's not going to really do much for what's underneath that building, and there's not a lot of land to just plonk some ground mounted. So this around agrivoltaics, aquavoltaics, community solar as well. So connecting up a bunch of things.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that I've observed you guys work on.
Yeah. It's been a year, I think, we've put in this as our focus.
For these sort of dual use usage that requires the input from social groups. Because there's no other way to do it.
Exactly.
How much what you have done in the past 3 months is 3 years is going to guide the next 3 years? You've become more certain of what the organization is, what it stands for, what it can achieve.
I think I've been repeating myself, but in a way more and more clear. For example, on the first year, I was already talking about how other countries are doing, and we should be doing some certain procedures. And we didn't really get to have it established at in the first year, of course, but we had some success. And we also were talking about best way to do it, maybe some guidelines, because I saw many countries are doing that. Of course, developers need guidelines, and government also, to communicate to each other that, okay, this is our principle and how we are going to address that in a certain way. So that's something we were meant to do for so long, and we are doing our first code of conduct this year. And for, because solar, it sounds easy, but there are so many details, particularly in Taiwan, that we need to find a more innovative, more, localized way to do it. So in every aspect, we will need to have some kind of guidebook for people if they are interested. We need to have more and more people getting interested. And so getting people on board, you need to give them an instruction. So for example, how social engagement means, how to do it, why we need to do it, how this is going to benefit you, and how to do the report, maybe. Why is it so important to have a good report? Yeah. Why is it so important to have information transparent to everyone? And what does that mean by having an ecological design or nature inclusive planning? And whatever, because a lot of developers, they claim themselves to be eco-friendly, and they have no idea what that means. They just they just use that word. So there are so many things we need to, judging from how much work we have done within the previous three years and how much we've learned from international experiences, I think moving forward we will be able to do that, to really put it into words.
Well, I hope with all of the work that you're doing, localizing your international comparisons in Taiwan and advancing energy transition and just transition in Taiwan, that eventually you'll actually have best case scenarios and practices that you can offer back.
Because
the work you're doing, a lot of hard work and a lot of niche applications that can be applicable to other developing countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really hope that the work that you're doing can then be offered back as case studies in the future.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
We'll work hard on that.
This will be my last podcast as host.
Certainly.
But I hope to be back in the not too distant future as a guest.
Sure.
You'll have
You're
me.
You're always welcome. That will be a surprise. Until next time.
Until next time.
See you.
Bye.